Station number 21739.
Charles Hall, the real threat.
Yeah, now we were sit-ard and we were ordered to make an advance into a big wood. And we had 1,000 yards of open ground. And the fifth or sixth when they went in were cut down by machine guns from the wood to such an extent that we lost a vast number of men. And at 5 o'clock at night, we were pulled back out of the line and relieved by the fourth Dorsets.
What part did you personally play in that action?
I was a, as I say in the Dorset, was an anti-tank gunner, so I was more in the rear than the front, which was the infantry at the front. And so therefore, in a way, I was spared the business that they went through. But as they advanced, they were being cut down to ribbons, being as it was complete open ground. And all along the front of the wood, the Jerry had got Spanders, etc., and that which did all the damage. And at 5 o'clock at night, we were pulled back out of the line, and the fifth Dorsets took over from where we left off.
But you were in the 5th Dorsets.
I was in the fifth,
Which battalion took over from you?
the fourth Dorsets, because the fourth, fifth Dorsets were both in 130 Brigade.
And was this attempted advance actually at Sittard?
Was what?
Was this attempted advance that you've just talked about,
Yes.
was that actually at Sittard?
Yes, that was actually at Sittard.
At the town?
No, just outside the town. But the thing is that through that engagement, the wood that we were advancing on was eventually renamed the Dorset Wood after the regiment.
What did you see of the casualties that the battalion took?
I saw very little of it actually in that respect, because I mean, as an anti-tank gunner, I didn't go forward like the infantry do. So therefore, I more or less remained at the rear, and therefore I wouldn't see what the chaos the Germans had caused, if you could understand.
What was morale like after those heavy casualties?
Very low. It was the morale was very low after that for quite a time. But having gone through the Reichswald and one or two other little incidences, and things began to get back to normal. Really, then another sort of main memory would be the actual Rhine crossing. When we were loaded into buffaloes and taken across the Rhine at a place, Dusseldorf. And once we got over the other side at Dusseldorf, went to a building, and instead of going upstairs, as you'd say, we went downstairs. because there was that many floors below the ground. We went into this building and we could hear the V2 rockets being launched in this particular building where we were. And mine, we didn't spend too much time there, because then we had to continue the advance.
How did you actually cross the Rhine?
In a buffalo, what they call a buffalo. It's like an armoured fighting vehicle without its turret.
Were you under fire?
Very slight fire, wasn't severe, if you could understand me. And from there, we made our way to a place called Cleve. Now, just outside of Cleve, the battalion of the Somersets were making their way towards the area. And their battalion transport was all in one big long line. And Jerry picked the first one off, and he picked the last one off, and, as would normally be, took his time in picking them off in between, because they couldn't go anywhere. So he apparently virtually destroyed the Somerset's transport at that time.
Where was this?
Cleve. And then...
Did you see that?
No, I didn't see the actual transport doings, but it comes out in brigade notes, and that you get all information come through to you at different times, etc. But Cleve had been severely bombed the night before we went in. And there was a prison in Cleve. And in that prison was 182 bodies. 180 were naked, 2 were partially dressed. Go on, ask me what they were.
I don't know.
The 180 bodies were women. The 2 partially dressed were male.
These were German civilians?
Germans, yeah.
Civilians?
Yes, Germans.
What had happened?
Well, Germans were had got at the back of their line sort of business what they commonly called stud farms, which means that troops in the front lines, etc., and that could go back to these particular camps where there were all women, and they could have their enjoyment with the women, if you understand me, then come back into the line. Now, these 180 bodies of women were part of one of these so-called camps. And with the bombing the night before, that was it.
And where was this?
At Cleve.
Did you see this?
I didn't actually see it myself. Because when I went through Cleve, I went through the churchyard at Cleve. Now, I'm not sure where it is at the moment, but I have got a photograph from the Daily Mirror, published during the war, of a Canadian officer lying in a wheelbarrow in this cemetery at Cleve, and you can see all the shallows and craters around, and I would say about an hour after the Canadian vacated the Wilbur, we went through the same cemetery, and I've always kept that photograph. It's getting a bit dilapidated now, but I've got it somewhere. I've got quite a few things different, but I'm not too sure where it is. Anyway, like we went through Cleve and began clearing up as we went along, and of course then we went round Bremen. Bremerhaven, on the big autobahn there. And when we got through Bremerhaven, we got a German staff car, and three of us had a little ride down the autobahn in this German staff car.
Where did you get the staff car from?
From the naval HQ at Bremerhaven.
Was it in good condition?
Oh, well, very good condition. Yeah. Then at the same time, being naval HQ, there were models of all different German battleships and cruisers, etc. And that, and I happened to get one. And I strapped it on the back of my carrier. And I eventually came back to a place called Turnhout in Belgium.
Before you go back to Turnhout, can you talked about being an anti-tank gunner?
Yes.
Can you tell me more about the equipment you used?
The anti-tank was a 6-pound anti-tank gun. And we just used, the shells, the 6-pound anti-tank gun.
What did you think of the equipment?
It was quite good, but it wasn't up to standard like the German 88. Now, as an anti-tank gun, there was nothing to beat the German 88 until towards the latter part of the war, when they started using the 17-pound anti-tank gun, and that was a very, 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 very good weapon. But their 17-pounder didn't come for use with battalions. That was an artillery unit of his own, 17 pounders, because it was a much bigger weapon.
Can you tell me about any actions you were in which you used the 6-pounder, please?
We actually used it more in the Bocages in Normandy. You see a tank, you fire at it.
Did that happen very often?
Oh, quite a few times. Because, the Bocages was tank country. That was in Normandy, though.
Do you think you had any success with it in Normandy?
Well, we had one or two successes, that's a certainty. It's digging a bit deep, isn't it, after all these years. There, like I say, there are certain things that stand out in your mind, but then there is a lot more that hasn't got the same significance as what that particular engagement did. You know what I mean?
Did you use a 6-pounder after Normandy?
Oh, yes. That was... It, it was when I left the beaches and joined the Dorsets that I became anti-tank gunner.
Did you and your 6-pounder get fired on by counterfire?
Oh, yes. I mean, you do. You get popped at it quite a few different times. I mean, you sight your gun at certain positions, hoping to get Germans and so forth and that. But at the same time, you've also got to take it into consideration that Jerry's not going to let you sit there on his own. If he can see you, he's going to do the same to you.
What opinion did you form of the German enemy?
Pardon me. Let's be truthful about it. There's no soldier like the British soldier. The Americans, the Germans, the Italians, they'll never come up to the standard of a British soldier. You see, I mean, people say about the Germans and everything and that, but the thing that you have to realise is the German soldier was the same as ourselves. They didn't want to shoot people and to do all, but they were under orders the same as we were. So, I mean, today, to change the subject, today, Tamworth is twinned with Bad Lasper in Sudetenland, Germany. And for quite a few years, we've gone over to Germany and mixed with the German forces that were in the war and everything. Just like you and I talking now. We're friends. And we've been... There was, on occasion, a Panzer divisional commander came over with a group from Germany. He got one arm. He came and stayed with me. And about 5-6 days. And a couple of days after he'd been staying with me, we got talking. And I found out that he was a Panzer commander at the Battle of Arnhem. And he raised his arm to bring his tanks forward, and a shell shot it off for him. But he didn't hold that against anybody. As he said to me, it was war. That was it. We were under orders. Which is true, isn't it?
Yes.
But he, actual fact, his name was Kurt Ulbrich, Baron von Wittgenstein. So he was German nobility, but he was a wonderful man.
Now, you were saying you went to a turnout.
Yeah, to turnout, and as I say, I had this model German battleship on back of my carrier, and a Belgian turned around, took it from me and took it to his house and built a plinth to attach to it and built a case around it so as to protect it. And I brought that home in July of 1944. And I was posted down to Pembroke Docks. And I was very friendly with the family there. And I eventually gave it to this family at Pembroke Docks.
What exactly was it?
Hmm?
What exactly was it?
It was about 3 foot, a model of a German destroyer, you know. And I gave it to them, people at Pembroke Docks, whether they still got it or not, I wouldn't like to say.
Where did you get it from?
I got it from Bremerhaven, at the Naval HQ at Bremerhaven.
What happened to you at Turnhout?
I say this Belgian built a case for me to protect this model destroyer.
Were you at Turnhout for long?
No. It was only just a brief rest period.
Was there any question of your being sent to the Far East?
Good point, that. Because having gone through Bremerhaven, we continued around the coast roads, like, and we came to Hamburg. And we were billeted to a place called Totsted, just outside of Hamburg. And I had my anti-tank gun lined up at a crossroad, because it was then the end of the war. We'd all been notified that the ceasefire had been signed and the war was finished. So what we were doing there, we had to direct, shall we say, the German divisions coming down the road to sort of camps for them to go into. And turnout at this particular time, orders came round that, being as the war in Europe had now finished, would any member like to volunteer to go to the Far East? And half a dozen of us said yes, we'd go.
Why did you volunteer to go to the Far East?
Well, we just volunteered to go to the Far East, like, sort of business. And anyway, we went back to the Osnabrück, which had been used as a transit camp. And from Osnabrück, we came back to UK. And like I say, I was posted to the 8th Manchester Regiment at Pembroke Docks. And eventually, we'd been there for about 3 months. And then we were then told that we wouldn't be going to the Far East because the war was more or less finished. And in the November of 45, I was posted from the 8th Manchester's to the 11th Battalion, the South Staffords at Berkhamsted. I went in the December. I went on the Empress of Scotland out to Egypt, and at a quaint old place called Kassassin.
Which battalion of the South Staffordshire was this?
11th. The 11th Battalion. No, we're stationed at Berkhamsted. We went to Kassassin to start with. Then from there, we were posted down to El Marza near Cairo. The battalion was disbanded, and I was posted to the 156 transit camp at Port Said. I was posted to 156 transit camp, Port Said. And my duties there was, I was a CQMS there, and I used to get the fellas to come into the camp for specific leave on one day, and another day I used to put them on board troop ships to bring them back home. And I stayed there until October 46.
How did you like being at Portside?
Very nice, very nice.
Why?
I can see myself now, sitting on the side of the sewers, dangling my feet in the canal, eating fresh figs, oranges. Beautiful.
How did you get on with the Egyptians?
Fairly well. Fairly well. No problems at all.
When you'd signed up in the army, what terms had you signed up on?
Originally, when I first signed up, I signed up for 9 years. And then different stages, you've extended your period of service, like. And I eventually finished up coming out in 1964.
Did you see any other active service?
No. Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, I'll be honest. I was in the EOCA business in Cyprus.
Which unit were you with then?
The 1st Battalion, South Staffords.
Whereabouts were you based?
We were stationed at Wayne's Keep, just outside Nicosia.
Where?
Wayne's Keep.
How do you spell that? Is it an English word?
Yeah, Wayne's. W-A-Y-N-E, is it?
Was it like a fort?
No, no, it's just like a camp. A tented camp.
Oh. And it's near Nicosia?
Yes, just outside of Nicosia. Close to the airport. Because then, in them days, we used to do roadblocks and certain patrols, etc. And that used to do them down the, what they called the Murder Mar on the Segorius Street. And a memory that sticks in my mind is one particular day I'd been on patrol on the Segorius Street from 5 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock. During the morning, I used to come up and drop one or two workers off, or men off, to get a cup of coffee in the cafes and so forth and that. Pick them up on the way back down, and this went on until, let's say, 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock, we're at the bottom end of on the Segorius Street, and I just turned in the connecting street to Leader Street, which is the main street, only a distance of about, say, 20 yards. And I handed over to another sergeant. He went down into Honor Segorius Street, and as he turned the corner into Honor Segorius Street, the Greeks from the clinics above, the cafes, dropped a bomb up his backside. Them Greeks knew who they wanted, and they knew when they were going to get him.
Why did they want him?
Well, I mean, there's ways of doing different jobs. I mean, because you're on a duty where you've got to stop different people and search them and all this kind, you still got to treat them with respect. You, during your life, you'll probably find you've got other people that are just the opposite. Now, as I say, he used to treat the Greeks like a piece of dirt, if you could understand me, when he got the opportunity. And therefore, they waited and they got their revenge eventually.
Which unit did he belong to?
1st Battalion, South Staffords.
Which company did he?
I couldn't tell you which company. Not today, look. This can't remember. All I know is we were with the 1st South Staffords. And then there was the occasion when a couple of the EOCA people had been sentenced to death. Right? Because we used to do the guard duties at the